Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Of all the leads in romantic comedies, the hero of Australian author Graham Simsion's novel is probably among the least likely. Don Tillman is a geneticist, a single one, and he's perfectly fine with that. But circumstances conspire to put him on the road towards finding a potential mate, which he tries to achieve through a thoroughly scientific questionnaire in which he tries to anticipate and eliminate anyone with whom he wouldn't be compatible. What the socially challenged Tillman does not anticipate is a woman named Rosie, who turns up at about the same time. An NPR review termed the results as an utterly winning screwball comedy, and Graham Simsion joined us by phone on a recent trip to the States. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mitch.
If I understand correctly, this book was not originally supposed to be a novel, and it was also not supposed to be a romantic comedy. What was your original vision, and how did it evolve to the book that you ended up writing?
Okay, I enrolled at the age of 50, and this is going back about 6 years, in a class in screenwriting. And I decided that I was going to write a screenplay, and it would be a drama about a socially challenged man searching for a partner and the aftermath of him finding that partner. He would be a physicist, and along the way we would learn a whole lot about physics. So that changed a lot as I learned about screenwriting, and as my vision of the story changed. It moved from drama to comedy. Don became a geneticist rather than a physicist, and the love interest changed from a nerdy Hungarian physicist to a woman who was exactly the opposite of everything that Don was looking for. So it went through an enormous amount of change. And then after 5 years of working on the script, and I'd got to a stage I was pretty happy with, and I had a producer lined up and everything, but no funding, I came up with the idea of writing it as a novel. I guess the original impetus was that it's easier to get a novel published than it is to get a movie made. And I already had a plot, I had characters, I had dialogue, so I was a long way down the path. But look, the other side of it was that I'd always had this dream of writing a novel and frankly didn't think I was good enough. But with those elements in place, I thought maybe this is the time to try it. And in changing to writing it as a novel, the story and I guess its tone changed a great deal, because in a film we're looking at our characters from the outside, the camera's looking at them and we only see the outside. But in a novel you can explore a character's inner world. And as soon as I wrote that first word of the Rosie Project novel, which was I, everything changed.
Well, and I wonder if you had created this world, even though it was initially conceived of as a screenplay, did you feel that you owed it to the characters that you had dreamed up and the place that you had dreamed up to bring this into existence?
Oh, yeah, look, I did. I guess that's a bit of a highfalutin way of putting it. I wanted to tell my story. I wanted people to read it. I didn't think I owed anything to a fictional character. But look, I didn't go into this in a very highfalutin, high-minded sort of way. I wanted to tell a story, and I understood that themes would emerge, that ideas would be in there, that you know, virtually unconsciously, because they're things I believe in, and so on. But I'm not one who thinks it's a good idea to have a message and to be hammering that message all the time. I think the message comes through in telling a story and what you believe being layered onto that story.
The original Don, as you dreamed him up, was a dramatic character, but I'm curious whether the idea of a socially challenged person is naturally a more comedic concept or a more comedic conceit than you had originally realized.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, what happened was I took a short story. In fact, when I say it came out of a screenplay, the very first incarnation of Don Tillman was a short story that I wrote to just sort of work up the character. And I took that along to class, and it was meant to be dramatic with just the occasional light touch, and people were laughing out loud. And, you know, I had a bit of an ethical question then to ask. It was great that he was generating comedy, but, you know, were we laughing at someone's disability? And for all sorts of reasons, I concluded that this was a legitimate way to go. And certainly the feedback I've had, particularly from the Asperger's community, has been just almost uniformly positive.
Well, and you are you don't necessarily spell him out in this book as having Asperger's, and you know, there's at one point he actually speaks to a group of people who essentially a support group for people with Asperger's or caregivers for people with Asperger's. But he talks about being wired differently, and I know you haven't necessarily wanted to diagnose a fictional character, but I'm curious whether there is something positive just in the idea that people are reading this and considering Don's status and maybe thinking about how other people they know relate to the world.
Look, absolutely. People often ask, how much study did you do on Asperger's syndrome? And I say, I spent 30 years working in information technology. You know, what study do I need to do? But the truth is, I really did not do any formal study of Asperger's syndrome, any reading on it, until after the Don character was absolutely formed. And even then, I really only read it so we could have discussions like this and I could talk in an informed way with that community. I never diagnosed Don as having Asperger's syndrome, but I sat down with an expert in Asperger's syndrome for lunch a couple of months ago, and he said to me, he said, Graham, you can quote me on this, Don Tillman has Asperger's syndrome. So it's official, if you like.
Well, and if he, as someone who has Asperger's, is an unlikely hero in a romantic comedy, I think one of the other underrated aspects to him is that he is fairly far along in life. This would be a different sort of romantic comedy if he were closer to Rosie's age, but this is a hero who is essentially middle-aged.
Yeah, look, he's 39. And that was just a tough point as to where to draw him. I didn't want to could have made him older, but I wanted him to be old enough that he'd almost given up, that, you know, he had a lot of experience, it hadn't worked for him. Rosie's 29, so she's not crazily younger or anything like that, and she's clearly had some issues in her life as well, and she's got some father issues, so perhaps, you know, subconsciously Don is playing a little bit into that position, being that bit of an older man. But, you know, people say he's an unlikely romantic hero, and I think, well, hold on. I mean, the world is full of unlikely romantic heroes, if you like, the guys who get married, the guys who get relationships, yeah, the women as well, you know, both sides. We're a whole mix of people, and many, many of us actually manage to find somebody. And I don't even think it's overly optimistic either. I mean, people will say, oh, you know, it's all a bit sweet because it, you know, I'm not giving too much away, it has a happy ending. Well, you know, a lot of people find partners.
Do you worry at all about the you know, I don't know if the reading demographics in Australia are similar to what they are in the States, but we hear frequently that men do not often read fiction and definitely not romantic comedy fiction. Did you see a challenge in writing as a man with a male protagonist for an audience that could just as easily be a female majority?
I was saved by my naivety. I had no idea that the audience for fiction was predominantly women until after I'd read my book. So I started off writing movies. And you think, okay, people go to movies, date nights, all that sort of thing. So I've written, you know, this book, and I go to the publisher, and I'm talking about the audience, and they're saying, hey, forget it, Graham. Men don't read romantic comedies. This is a women's book. What? But as it turned out, a lot of men have ended up reading it. I think the situation is exactly the same in Australia as it is in the US. But in Australia, certainly when I've been touring and that sort of thing, I've really pushed the idea that, you know, because it'll be an all-women audience, is take this, show it to your husband. Don't tell him it's a romantic comedy. Tell him it's a comedy about a man looking for a woman. Men will get that. Tell him to read the first 5 pages. If they don't like it, throw it away. But just get them to have a go at it.
How much of your own early dating life did you mine for the material in this?
Look, I probably mined a fair bit of my own social awkwardness when I was younger, and I guess I'm not Robinson Crusoe there. I think most men, if they admitted, have had some pretty awkward dates when they were younger. There are no specific instances in there. I mean, like actual scenes that I can say, I lived that, you know, I lived the apricot ice cream disaster.
The jacket incident did not happen to you.
It did not happen to me. The jacket incident is based on something that happened to a friend of mine. And it, you know, he basically did turn up with a hiking jacket, going out to, in fact, a restaurant in New York City, top steakhouse that had a jacket requirement. And he came along. I was with him. We never actually got to the restaurant because I checked out his jacket as we left. And I said, hey, you know, you can't go in that jacket. But you know, in the book, you say, what if, and you know, what if he's meeting his date at the restaurant, it's a first date, et cetera, et cetera. But broadly, I just mind my own awkwardness for some of it.
And we have not talked much about Rosie herself, who, it becomes evident fairly quickly, will at least be his romantic foil. She has her own quest. What is she looking for? If he is kind of in his own strange way looking for the right person, tell us a little bit about Rosie's quest.
Rosie wants to know who her biological father is. So the story is that Rosie's mother had a one-night stand on the night of her medical graduation, and along came Rosie as a result of this. But Rosie's mother has passed away without ever telling Rosie who the real father is. Rosie knows it's one of the men in her mother's graduation class, and she wants to know who it is.
And conveniently, we have a hero in a geneticist who has some insight into how he might be able to figure that out.
Exactly, and I hope not too conveniently. I hope the causality is as clear as I can make it. But yeah, I try not to rely too much on coincidences in these things, and it just sets up. Don's a geneticist. Yeah, he's the man.
Well, even if he had been a physicist, he might have been able to devise some way of figuring it out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I changed him. He was originally a physicist, and I changed him to geneticist as the story developed, and I wanted this quest of Rosie's to be in there. And it gives us a chance to do a little bit of instruction in genetics and evolutionary psychology, and you know, add a little bit of, I think, intellectual flavor to the book, or intellectual interest to the book. But yeah, so Don and Rosie head off on this quest to find out who her biological father is by surreptitious DNA testing. And that's the engine that keeps the story going, a sort of a whodunit that throws them together, even though they might not choose to be together.
Well, and so in the end, without giving too much away, is it oversimplifying things to say that this is for both of them the tug of war between what they think they want and what they really need?
Look, I don't think that's oversimplifying things at all. That's the heart of it, is do we really know what it is that we want? You know, we claim to know, or do we know what we need? We say, I want this. Don's got his 16-page double-sided questionnaire of the ideal woman, which Rosie doesn't meet at all. Rosie, in turn, is looking for an idealized father. She was brought up by her mother's husband, who has done, as far as we can tell, a pretty reasonable job. But she doesn't think so. She thinks that out there is the perfect father. And as they meet these candidate fathers, as it were, they start to find that some of them are jerks, some of them aren't so nice. Nobody's perfect.
For someone who didn't originally want to set out to write a romantic comedy in the first place, how comfortable are you in that world now? Do you think that is this your oeuvre, to use a highfalutin term?
Well, it's interesting because once I realized that the structure I was working with in the film genre, because, I mean, romantic comedy is really a film genre, a movie genre, much more than it is a book, you know, literature genre. Once I realized I was in that place, I had to learn about the genre, just so I knew whether I was following it or breaking it. So I did a lot of work. I watched a lot of romantic comedies. I watched a lot of screwball comedies, the precursors of romantic comedies from the 1930s and 40s and so on. And they informed the Rosie Project probably just as much as more modern romantic comedies like Sleepless in Seattle and Hitch and so on. So having acquired, you know, all this knowledge and signing a 3-book contract, I thought, I want to write another romantic comedy. And in fact, and that meant I wasn't going to be writing a sequel to The Rosie Project, because you know, you can't write a romantic comedy as a sequel to a romantic comedy. Well, Helen Fielding came with Bridget Jones, The Edge of Reason, but you've got to do something like break them up and bring them back together, which is, you know, or kill one of them and, you know, set them off again. And I didn't want to do that.
Well, and for people who have read the book, it maybe then is no coincidence that I am talking to you and you are in New York?
I am in New York right now, writing the sequel to The Rosie Project. I'm at 50,000 words at the moment. I stood up from the computer to talk to you.
Well, I am grateful that you were willing to take that break, and we will be waiting for the sequel. Thank you so much, Graham Simsion.
Thank you. In the meantime, I hope that your listeners will read the original Rosie Project.
Graham Simsion is the author of the novel The Rosie Project, published by Simon & Schuster. We spoke with him by phone from New York. That's Monday's edition of Lake Effect. Tomorrow, it's our live Project Milwaukee broadcast from the Black Historical Society building. There are details on how to attend at wuwm.com/projectmilwaukee. I'm Mitch Tyke. Great to have you along today, and I sure hope you can at least tune in tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.